Find this podcast and others like it at the number one new media network, Podshow.com. Better, faster, stronger. And now with new minty fresh scent.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
Meander, ain't you going to the leader man, ragged meter man? Oh my honey, oh my honey, let me take you to Alexander's grandstand brass band. Ain't you coming along? Come on in here, come on in here, Alexander's ragtime band. Come on in here, come on in here, it's the best band in the land. They can play a bugle call like.
And this is Windy City Queer Cast, show number 80. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick.
I have all my hair, Peter.
You have all your hair.
I did not shave my head this weekend. As, you know, usually I like to follow the icons down the stony end, but
really?
This is one I just could not go down.
Down the stony end. Look at you.
Wow. What is going on with Miss Spears, Miss Federline,
Brittany, and she's got the babies, and I just want her to take care of her babies and not be cutting her hair off.
So, but here's the deal. Like, you know, Meredith Ferreira was talking about it on the Today Show and had, like, psychologists, and people are, like, going, you know, is she just a, you know, a... addicted to drugs and out of her mind? Is she screaming for a plea for help and trying to say, like, I'm tired of people seeing me a certain way? You know, what is truly, or is she truly just having, like, a nervous breakdown? Like, you
am
know.
I supposed to care though? That's my
my
question back
at
everybody.
But, well,
am I supposed to care about this?
I think we are supposed to care. Maybe we're not supposed to care, but hopefully somebody's supposed to care. When we just had Anna Nicole Smith, like, you know, and her son, two people, you know, dead. Who have we even heard the autopsy yet on Anna Nicole Smith?
No,
like, what the hell it was?
No,
the son, you know,
still,
we still don't know.
Is...
I mean, I think there's this thing that we do with celebrities, and we feel like we can just consume them. And
well, we can, and I think we can consume them up until this uncomfortable point. And there's this uncomfortable point that I think Britney has started to push.
Right.
Getting naked, taking your clothes off, showing your hoo-hoo, whatever, that's par for the course. That's
right.
That's celebritastic news we love. But now she seems to a lot of people to be acting really strange.
Well, this isn't sexy and glamorous. Is
no.
that why people want to back away and go, why do
so.
We care? Like, why do
so.
We have to have a problem? I mean, shouldn't we care when people are showing this amount of signs of, like, mental breakdown,
well,
and collapse?
But they're not, because shaving your head has nothing to do with any of that. Shaving, I mean, as a person who, and granted, I am a man.
Right.
But as a person who regularly shaves my head and,
yes,
and does all that.
Yes, but you cannot use that equation.
But I can because my point is, she's doing something sensational. Whether she was showing us her chooch or shaving off her head, why are we reacting so differently to it? I don't think we should. I think we should just say, hey, look at that Britney Spears. She shaved her head. That's
yeah,
so Britney
but for
Spears.
A woman and a long-haired, sexy woman, that is a pretty strong reaction of somebody who's
Madonna
either been...
cut all her hair off, and we freaked out when she did that.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just feel like there's some sort of emotional thing going on with her.
I think that's reading far too
and,
much into
well,
it.
Well, but also she was quoted, I'm tired of people touching me. I don't want people
sure.
touching me. You know, there's this whole thing of not being a sexualized being for a woman to shave their head. You know, I mean, why did Natalie Portman shave her head as this character V for mm-hmm. Vendetta? You know, mm-hmm. there is a very Sinead O'Connor, you know, the shaved head is a mm-hmm. very desexualized. I mean, yes, Madonna cut her hair very short. But when she did it, she sang Papa Don't Preach, you know, so I mean, which was a song about having had sex. You know, this is a very different thing going on with this woman. And I don't know.
I think there's more to the story. I think there's always more to the story, and we can't get that more to the story until she's ready to tell us.
Well,
more to
I think
story.
We're giving her way too much credit for having a plan, having a story, and I think story just may be sadness. She is now divorced. She has just lost her husband, which we don't know how that went down. Was that her choice or his choice? Right. She has two children under the ages of two. She's not the brightest bulb in a box. I mean, let's just go that she has a lot of money, but probably very isolated. You know, it's
I don't know. I think just by saying all those things, you're projecting so much negativity onto her, and I don't think we can do that. What I think we can say is, hey, Brittany, girl, you cut your hair off. That doesn't look so pretty on you. Don't do that.
She's a pretty girl. I mean, she's just not wearing these weird wigs.
She may be happy she's done with that man. She may be happy she's got these two babies who she can love, and she may just want some freedom and say, you know what? Fuck you all. I'm not what you think I am. I'm going to fucking buzz my head if I want to, and fuck you.
Well, and I can totally be down with that had she finished like 30 days of rehab, but the same day she checked out of rehab, she was in there less than 24 hours. She was back on a plane.
Truly, because we all knew that she was in rehab, I'm sure that's why she checked out of that place. I know a lot of celebrities, we find out they've been through rehab, but we don't find out that they're in rehab. So I don't blame her one bit, because you know the fucking tabloids had their spies in there. These tabloids, they put someone, they say, you know what? You're going to go into this rehab program. Even though you don't have a drug program, you're going to go in there to spy on Britney Spears and tell us everything she's doing.
Right.
So I suspect that's why
she left.
Plenty
of them have been in there. I mean, Matthew Perry was in there in the heyday of Friends. You know,
After they're leaving, that's when they're saying they're coming out of rehab.
Well, sometimes.
Not when they're going. Most of the time, I would argue. Most of the time. So I think the magnifying glass is just, it's a little too hot on her right now. I think we need to just pull it back. We need to still love Britney for what Britney was. She was this great little pop icon. Nothing more, nothing less. She ain't no, like, you know, Margaret Thatcher. She's no Madeleine Albright.
No,
nothing like that.
Not.
We know that.
She's no Christina either when she had her, or Mariah when they had their little.
But it does make me angry that people are thinking that something is so radically wrong. And it's like, you know what? Time will tell.
If something is radically
wrong. It totally will.
Because if she is addicted and an alcoholic, or if she is having problems with any kind of addiction and whatever she's ingesting, which has to be something based on this behavior, and that could just be young and stupid and not be a serious problem, as you're inquiring.
Time will tell because it will progress.
Because they're progressive illnesses, and they will progress, and we will know.
If she has a problem, it'll definitely come.
But
to
interesting
the
to see, you know, if she did have a problem, why Kevin would leave her? Because in the state of California, he's going to get about half of everything she's got, and he's going to be protected with the kids. And if he can say that she's doing this shit, then he's going to have even more of a case. Now she's gone into rehab. Now she's having a breakdown. I mean,
and who knows that he didn't have the problem? And he's the one who got her started.
Well,
and
he may
he's
not
still
have.
Going on fumes. So that my point is that it's just it's so interesting to me that when people step outside of that mold, even one step, we start to cast them in such a negative light, and it happens with queer people all the time. Let's go right to the subject. I want to jump right on this asshole basketball player.
Yep.
Tim Hardaway saying this thing, how he hates the gays. We got a little news clip about it. He's not gay.
Obviously, but he may be. Methinks the woman doth protest too much.
Right. Well, there's two sides to this, and I've been talking to a lot of my gay friends about this. There's the guys who are like, good. I'm glad he said some shit like that. Finally, someone had the balls to say some shit like that.
I'm glad when people like this. It's unfortunate. It's a lot of African American men these days who are saying, and that, you know, the F word's becoming the N word for the community. But I mean, for society.
Right. Well, that was the other side. That's the other side of the point. They're like, yeah, but he's a basketball player. People were looking at him. People were in a very masculine kind of profession /world / where he is. He's also black. That changes the rules a little bit with what he says. And
he was probably one
time
in a locker room way too long with John Amici, who is really adorable. I saw him on Bill Maher's. I thought he had a freeze on his interviews until the Advocate article comes out, but he was on Real Time with Bill Maher on Friday night. And he is adorable. He's British. Oh, he's cute.
I need to check him out. See, me in sports, I'm like, what?
I know, I am too, but he's really cute. He's very, you know, articulate and lovely. He's quite a lovely guy. Cute.
Yeah, but I have to say, I think what was the clip I just showed you? No, it wasn't Greg Kinnear. It was
Jimmy Kimmel.
And there's just a brilliant, it's so funny. George Takei does a little thing.
We need to link this on our
about
site.
Tim Hart. I refuse to put a YouTube link. I'm just putting that out there. We are not going to spread the virus of viral videos. So if you want to see it, you go to YouTube and you search for George Takei and Tim Hardaway.
There
That's
you
all
go.
You got to do. I'm not linking anything like that because I don't.
T-A-K-E-I, I think is how you pronounce it.
Just Mr. Takei. Sulu. You can put Sulu Takei.
Mr. Takei.
Takei.
I like to call him Takei.
Mr. Takei, because he's a very distinguished gay man. I like him. He's well spoken.
He was on Will and Grace. He was at the Chicago Gay Games.
He was the lead of the gay parade. He was riding in his little beautiful little car with his husband. It was so nice and everything. But he does a funny little parody of him, and he pokes fun at the whole situation. But I think
it's really funny. So you should really go look at that Jimmy Kimmel and George Takei.
Totally worth it. But I'm so amazed at when celebrities, when they step outside of that good and clean and pure mold, how we descend on them, how we really, you know, the vultures aren't really the paparazzi these days. The vultures are us. The blogosphere just, it knee-jerk reacts to so many interesting things like that. And I don't know if it's good or bad yet. I like it. I like it because people are talking and people have these independent voices, but we knee-jerk react. We buck against stuff so hard.
But you know what's good is that you can't, you know, and that was the big controversy with Grey's Anatomy with Isaiah Washington, but with something like this, he so definitively said, like, I don't like gay people. It's not with this new age of communication and the internet and blogging and everything, as you're just saying, it just doesn't get swept under the carpet. So what you have to hope is that a dialogue begins and that change occurs, or whatever the conflict, the tension, that at least manifests to being on the surface. And I agree with people that you were talking to who said, I want to know my enemies. I think silence and apathy is a bigger, that was a big thing. Silence equals death with the whole AIDS epidemic in the 80s. But, you know, I think silence and apathy. I remember one time my father and I having this conversation, you know, after I came out, and I said something. I said, do you understand that if you don't, you know, learn how to be okay with me being gay and to say that to people and be a person that can give voice to, it's not that you have to thump with a Bible thumper or anything like that, but to just be quiet is almost worse than saying, you know, I'm homophobic or I don't like gay people. It's almost worse to not voice an opinion. That's why our straight allies are so important to us, because, you know, voicing which side of it is a line. You kind of can't not be on one side of the line.
And these days it penetrates so much of every facet of life that you're going to encounter in this country. It's not just one or the other.
And
so,
I think many people are figuring out which side of the line they are on, but I think less and less want to be on the line that says, I hate gay. Well, maybe not less and less, maybe more people will stand up to the forefront, but
I think more people just want to be quiet about it and don't want to say anything. They don't want to make waves. That's as people, we don't like to make waves usually. Yeah. I like to make waves because I've got a big fucking mouth, but most people don't like to make waves. So I'm going to make a little
waves. I like to ride the wave.
I'm going to make a little waves right now. So I got I got some money from my bonus, my company. My company pays out this weird bonus, and I go to Crate and Barrel Sunday morning because I want to go to Crate and Barrel Sunday morning. I figure it's going
to
be...
Which Crate and Barrel did you go to?
North and Clybourne.
Good. Best one.
I figure it's going to be quiet in there Sunday morning. It's going to be all relaxed. Little did I know, I step up to the Crate and Barrel. I figure they opened at 10 o'clock. I was wrong. They opened at 11 o'clock. But at 10:45, I'm out there. The place is packed. I can see it is packed. It is filled with people and the doors are locked. Little not understanding it. So I go, you know, I got off the train. I walked across the street. I start walking toward the Container Store and I look over and, this is people just engaged. Come and pick out your dinnerware. Come and pick out your thing. They have little, I don't know what you would call the little nuptial parties.
Oh, right.
To pick out, you know, with the little beep, the computer to say, I want those dishes. Beep. I want that chair. Beep. I want that table. So I went to the Container Store for 15 minutes and, you know, like fawned over all the glassware. Didn't buy anything, but walk back over. It's now 11 o'clock. The doors are open and I walk in, you know, and there's a perky little girl in an apron. She's like, hi, can I help you? And I was like, I'm looking for the Madison table. I'm looking for the Madison dinner, the Madison table and chairs. Cause I wanted to sit at the fucking table and sit the chairs to know if I wanted to want it. She said, oh, it's right here. And, you know, I think your fiance would love this. I was like, excuse me. She's like, oh, well, isn't your fiance here hanging out with everybody? You know, because this is, you know, this everybody's, you know, where's your little computer? Where's your clipboard? I was like, I don't have a fiance. And she's like, oh. She's like, oh, well, the right girl will come along.
And you said,
I read her like the fucking Bible.
What'd you say?
I said, you know what? I don't have a fiance. And even if I did, I probably couldn't marry him in this country because they don't let us get married. And all of a sudden the look of horror and pallid color just like flushed over her face. And she got a little upset. Rightly so, but I was a little upset with her. And every person I talked to in that store that morning, I had a question. Oh, where's your fiance? I'm sure she'd like to hear this too. I was like, people, you got to stop that. You got to just let that go. don't assume I'm straight.
And the store was designed by a gay man.
Hello, and I have
and
a gay,
he won an award for it.
And you see the gay hair I'm working. I was working
hair. You're working some gay hair.
I've got the gay hair working. I just been to the shop. I just got my nails did. I was all like, I was totally fagged
out. They thought you were a metrosexual.
I couldn't be gay if I tried in that fucking store on Sunday morning. So note to all of you, Sunday mornings at Crate and Barrel is for the straight people.
Yeah,
don't go. With the little computer.
Let
now,
me see a picture of your table.
What my, oh, no, this isn't a picture of my table. This is a picture of some other stuff I'm going to buy. But it's a gorgeous table. It's the Madison table. It's got seats 10. I'm only getting 8 chairs. I'm also going to get the Madison buffet. It's in like dark wood. It's gorgeous. It's shiny. It's perfect. And it's coming on Thursday. So I'll have it
you
here
can get a truckload for $50 at the Crate and Barrel. That's
right
what I love or something like that.
It's 69 now. 69.
Well, that's
dirty,
a good number.
Right?
That's dirty.
So I was telling the story to a couple of friends and they're like, oh girl, you should have been like, well, my husband's up on the third floor and I don't know what he'd think about this and everything. But I was like, no, why do I have to? I was so offended that they assumed I was straight. And I know that was the event and I know that's what was going on. But it's little things like that. That's not homophobic behavior, but it still just scratches at me. Like, don't ever assume I'm straight or gay. Don't assume anything. Don't assume my relationship status. It pisses me off.
Well, and
so
you know what? And here's my thought, something I want to talk about. Somebody now could send you a Hallmark card if they just wanted to say, you know what, Peter, I'm sorry that experience happened to you at the Crate and Barrel, because right. Hallmark is now doing very specific cards for different things.
Are you serious?
Yes, they are.
So I'm sorry you're prolapsed to get it pushed back
in.
I love
so.
You.
They're starting to tackle real life situations. This was in the Tribune. Things about, you know, very specifically cards for people who are going through chemotherapy, cards.
Oh, wow.
For people who have just, you know, might be going through a divorce.
Your pet passed away. Or...
And cards for people who have just come out. And I kind of read
a
it.
Card?
Thinking, I kind of thought, well, maybe is this, you know, it's yet to be seen because I want to see these cards, you know. Is it going to say, you know, sorry, you're gay? Or is it going to be like, you know.
Hey, girl.
But no, actually, I do know the answer to that. I think, you know, some of the sentiments on the cards are things that are just like,
be you,
it's
be
great.
Strong,
be
it's
you,
great.
Be yourself, and images of rainbows,
and
they're trying to be subtle with the gay cards from
a
what
card,
they've said.
Though? I don't
but
know if that's weird.
They're saying nowadays that there aren't enough cards. Like people are sending cards for things more than just birthdays and just when somebody dies. That they're trying to think of more real life situations that somebody might want to send a card for, as opposed to having so many blank cards. So this will be, you know, soon to be seen, but
is this like a design your own or no? They're
no,
just
no, this is a new line that they're going to, this is a new line that they are pushing out called Journeys.
Well,
and
girl,
it's their Journeys line.
I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you how this is going to breed more problems.
Yep. Well, we already have them in the gay community. I wanted to say, go into gay bookstores. Right, we have gay cards. Hallmark's just not creating them.
When the Walgreens at 57th and Wentworth has, hey, girl, happy you're gay cards, it's going to cause some problems. There's going to be some people in the neighborhoods that have issues with this.
Well, it may be. You know, it'll be interesting to see because...
So Hallmark, be careful.
I think Hallmark is getting on the niche card business because you've got the Ike and Mike cards with the old time photographs. You've got all kinds of, you know, if you go up into, I mean, and if you're listening to this podcast and you have like a gay or alternative area of town,
go there.
You know, there's always going to be, you know, card shops or stores that have these kind of gay, you know, gay cards with two guys on the front or jokes about that kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see, but it's just a whole new thing. I think it's showing that Hallmark's not quite so conservative and trying to.
And I think it's a good step. It's a good step. But I don't know about that. Hey, you're gay. Yay.
I don't know. I don't know if that's what they're going to say. Maybe we should submit those with some artwork.
That's going to be, oh my God. I'm not even going to go there. What the artwork could be like.
Yeah.
But you know what they should have? They should have a card for, hey, I'm so happy you're going to see a great concert tonight. Or, hey, I'm so happy you're going to see a great artist.
Let's talk about who's
that's
on the show.
That's such a
today.
Stupid little segue. I couldn't come
it.
Up with anything better. We have.
Or, hey, I worship you. You are my idol.
Yes,
or you
exactly.
are my favorite musician. Meet me after the show.
You can be gay. Let's do cabaret.
There you go. That's a good
one. That's a little
too.
Limerick.
I am your stalker.
I'm trying.
Check yes or no if you'd like to meet me.
Okay.
So who's
hold
on the
you
show
down.
Today?
Take your breath away. Maud Baggert is joining us. Fiona Apple's
Maud.
Sister.
Fiona Apple's sister. Now,
Fiona
why
Apple's
is her name
sister.
Not Apple?
I don't know. I don't get
because
it.
Because Apple is Apple's. It's Fiona Apple Maggard is her real name.
Oh, I didn't know
and
that.
And Maud kept her real name. I met Maud many years ago when she opened at Feinstein's at the Regency, and now she has just taken off
she
in New York.
Is.
And she's quite beautiful, and her voice is so from another time.
It really is. It has the and it's from another time, but yet it's also timeless. I think she's she's just such a got a great great timbre to her voice. That's an Annie Lennox word.
Well, and she's one of these almost storytellers with her voice. She's going to be here at part of the Steppenwolf Theater's Traffic Jam series and doing her show Good Girl, Bad Girl.
Yeah, so we heard a track from her coming at the opener of the show, and we're going to have a few more thought and peppered throughout the program today, and we'll have Maude on. We've got
big news
for
lots
you.
Lots of news.
Lots of news, as always, and we'll be back with you right after this.
Guess who we got to star in Legends? The hilarious comedy by James Kirkwood, Joan Collins, and Linda Evans together again for the first time since Dynasty. Of course they get along. Gotta go. That's Joan. Angel, isn't it thrilling?
Oh, I never dreamed Linda would be acting with me again. If you call that acting.
That must be Linda. Linda, sweetheart, I was just talking to Joan.
Really? Well, I've always enjoyed her work, ever since I was a little girl.
Are you talking to Linda? Find out if she's still in show business.
Is that Joan? Find out if she's still alive.
Hang on, I'm patching you through on conference call.
Joan?
Linda?
Darling!
I thought you were dead!
Joan Collins and Linda Evans live on stage in Legends, the comedy about big stars and bigger egos.
Need a vacation from your holiday? Crave some real relaxation and cuddle time without Cousin Susie watching your every move? Not to worry, GayHotelDiscounts.com is here to help. If you're a queen in need of a king, bed that is, you can find the luxury you desire at a price you can afford. Powered by the strongest search engine on the web, GayHotelDiscounts.com are your gay travel experts.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Edible Underwear Maker.
Mr. Edible.
Your true genius combined two of man's favorite things, panties and food.
I can taste it now.
They're a snack. They're underwear. They're a snack and underwear. Brilliant.
Two treats in one.
Gorgeous grape. Rock my world raspberry. Bodacious banana.
26 flavors.
And nothing says, I want you, like a man with a mouthful of underpants.
I want you, baby.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Edible Underwear Maker. Because thanks to you, when it comes to panties, extra large means extra yummy.
Yummy, yummy, yummy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
In your life.
Join the club.
For the week of February 19th, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Germany, 1722. Seven musicians apply for the prestigious post of organist at the Thomaskirche. Insecurities, shortfalls of talent, and wildly clashing ideologies collide, creating complications in a witty and wild exploration of music, ambition, and art. Don't miss Bach at Leipzig at Writers Theater. This vibrant play draws its inspiration from history while taking much delight in its fictional flights of fancy. For more on Bach at Leipzig, log on to writerstheater.org or call 847-242-6000.
The Wooden Breeks is playing now at the Looking Glass Theater in the Water Tower Waterworks. Heidi Stillman directs Glenn Berger's masterful tale of a man tormented by the memory of his beloved and stuck in his own story. Join dreamers, schemers, and would-be lovers navigating their way through the murky Scottish town of Brood. For tickets, call 312-337-0665 or visit lookingglasstheater.org.
And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
The Windy City Queercast is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago and Legends, a comedy by James Kirkwood about big stars, big egos, and big hair, starring Dynasty stars Joan Collins and Linda Evans. Playing now. For tickets, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
A song that keeps saying, remember,
This is your Windy City Queercast News.
Former NBA player Tim Hardaway has been dropped as a league spokesman after telling a radio interviewer he hates gays. Hardaway, speaking on a Miami radio station about John Amici, the former NBA player who came out of the closet, said, quote, "Well, you know, I hate gay people. I let it be known. I don't like gay people. I don't like to be around gay people," end quote. He released a brief apology, but then said in another interview that he would not speak to any relatives he knew were gay.
Al Franken has formally announced that he will run for the U.S. Senate in Minnesota in 2008 to challenge Republican incumbent Norm Coleman. Franken's announcement came on the final day of his show on the liberal radio network Air America. And former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani confirmed that he is running for president in 2008. However, with his more liberal views on abortion and gay rights, he may have to work to win over some of those Republican social conservatives.
The Iowa Senate has approved new protections for gay and lesbian students by sending a measure to the House that would ban harassment based on sexual orientation. The majority Democrats rejected several efforts to alter the measure, including broadening the scope of the victims, believing they should focus on the students who need the most protection.
In Arizona, the reward for information leading to the arrest of the men who attacked a gay couple outside a Scottsdale restaurant last December has been increased to $12,000 because of a PFLAG donation. Andrew Frost and Gene Rowland were attacked by as many as seven men while walking out of the restaurant hand in hand.
Researchers at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases have discovered a weak spot in the AIDS virus. Unlike the rest of a mutating virus, one key part of HIV's surface can be penetrated by the HIV-fighting antibody B12.
Just a B12. It's crazy. Jennifer Hudson makes history as the first black singer to appear on the cover of Vogue magazine. The Oscar-nominated star of Dreamgirls is the cover of the annual Power issue next month. Hudson, who was photographed by Annie Leibovitz, follows in the footsteps of Oprah Winfrey and Halle Berry as only the third African-American celebrity on the fashion publication's cover.
In movie news, faux singing duo Milli Vanilli made up of Fabrice Morvan and the late Rob Pilatus will be the subject of a movie produced by Kathleen Kennedy. And on DVD, Anna Nicole Smith's last film, the campy sci-fi comedy she helped to bankroll, Illegal Aliens, will be released on DVD this May.
Hundreds of gay and lesbian couples who were the first to receive marriage licenses in the country gathered at San Francisco City Hall to mark their third anniversary. San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom said that it's only a matter of time before same-sex marriage becomes legal throughout this country, citing that Spain, Canada, and South Africa all have legalized same-sex marriage since 2004.
And that's your Windy City Queercast News.
Hi, this is Candace Kane, and I'd like to say gorgeous, and thanks a lot for listening to Windy City Queercast.
Ooh, I got a message from below. It was from a man I used to know about a year or so ago before he departed. Just as happy as can be, I'll tell you what he said to me. He said, if ever you get heavy hearted, pack up your sins and go to the devil in Hades. You'll meet the finest of gentlemen and the finest of ladies.
Maude Maggart launched her cabaret career with the support of mentors Andrea Markovici and Michael Feinstein. She appeared as protege at various venues, including Feinstein's at the Regency in Manhattan, the Plush Room in San Francisco, and the Oak Room at the Algonquin Hotel in Manhattan. Oh, see, we need her to come to Chicago. Mm-hmm. She's got to hit a room.
Yeah.
In 2005, she was the Time Out New York Mac Award winner for Special Achievement in Cabaret and Mac winner for Best Female Debut. And now she is, folks. She's coming to Chicago for Steppenwolf Theater's Traffic Series on Thursday, March 8th. It is a show you will not want to miss. Mm. Hello, Ms. Maude. How are you?
Hello, Amy. Hello, Peter. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
We should just have you sing, and then there's Maude.
Right.
You know, I've never seen that show.
Have you never seen that show?
I've never seen
Okay, Peter's going to burn you some episodes
yeah.
and send them to you.
I'm saying, no, you'll just come over. We'll have tea and watch Maude in the afternoon in my house. It's great.
It's a great warm-up. It's a warm-up to our show.
I can
show.
Sing the whole Golden Girls theme song.
Oh,
here,
well, that's
never
good.
Saw Maude.
Oh, thank you for being a friend. That's delightful.
We may ever do that for our promo. You all will have to listen for that after the interview. So now you really have resided in both coasts, and you have left this Midwest section of the world a little off your radar. You have homes in both California and New York?
Sort of. I live technically in Venice Beach.
Yeah.
But I'm in New York a lot, and I grew up here. So when I'm here, sometimes I stay with my mom. Because I'm in New York right now.
Yeah.
But actually right now I'm at the Algonquin.
Yes, you're at the Algonquin Hotel where you've been doing your show. And just fantastic, fantastic reviews. You're really taking New York City by storm. And I want to just talk about your, go back just a little bit, because you mentioned your mom. I mean, you were born into such a musical family. I don't think many people quite have the legacy of, like, it is in your blood. I mean, you had you had these grandparents who were performing in swing band. Your folks met doing a Broadway show. Your sister is singer Fiona Apple. I mean, what was music like in your house? I mean, the genres are multiple. I mean, there's a plethora of different styles there.
I imagine sort of that you flushed and there was this glorious Gershwin tune that just came out of the toilet or something, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I came out singing Gershwin, right? Well, music, I mean, it was always around in the house, and I think that it kind of went in stages. Like, when, before I was old enough to really pick my own music, my parents played a lot of classical music and Broadway soundtracks. I, like, knew a chorus line through and through before I was, like, 8.
And before you should be singing tits and ass to, like, the tops of your lungs. That's what I was doing. I was singing Dance 10 Looks 3 when I was, like, 11, and my parents were mortified.
Yeah, right.
They were like, where's your Annie album?
Yeah, no, I never got into that stuff. But it was, it was like a chorus line and Jesus Christ Superstar. And my father was always performing in a musical somewhere.
Yeah.
So I remember he did South Pacific. So I learned some of the music to that. And, you know, I was peppered with, like, some Bette Midler. And I remember we had the Barbra Streisand, Barry Gibb album.
Yes. Oh, it was so white, wasn't it?
I loved that.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, when you get old enough to sort of make your own decisions and explore on your own, then I got really into pop music, and I got into, I went through, like, a little flower child phase where I was really into, like, Joan Baez and Simon and Garfunkel. And it was a great mix of stuff. But I never abandoned my affinity for any of the music that I grew up with.
Right.
And my mom married a much younger man when I was, actually, she got together with him when I was, like, 6. And he was, like, he was practically a deadhead. Like, he was really into classic rock and the Grateful Dead. So then that got thrown into the butt, so to speak.
So why cabaret and why the American songbook genre? I mean, why did that speak to you or is speaking to you right now?
Well, I think that, I find that I can sing it very well. Like, I can interpret it well. To me, it's, I know that it seems like it's stylized music because it's of a very distinctive genre, but to me, it's kind of like the most, it's the simplest music. Mm-hmm. Like, the sentiments are very clear, in a lot of songs from the American Popular Songbook. Like, in an Irving Berlin song, there's not really too much confusion about what the song is about. And
right.
It's not overworded, and it's poetic, but in a simple way, you know?
Mm. Right.
So in one way, I feel like it's the least stylized kind of music, and that makes it like each song is like a fresh palette, you know, like a fresh canvas on which you can draw your own interpretation. And that really appeals to me.
Mm.
And also, it's just beautiful music, a lot of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the joyful parts about the American Songbook is that it's, I've always thought of it like a coloring book, and those are pages, and the artist steps in and then puts in all the colors and really fills all that up, because it's, you know, you can hear yourself, you can hear anybody else sing the same song, you know, I've Got Beginner's Luck, maybe, just for pulling that out of the randomly and just hear how different radically sounds per artist. So what kind of colors do you paint with? What do you like the most? Do you like the sad songs?
It depends on what I think the song calls for.
Hmm.
I mean, right now in my show, I sing Do It Again, the Gershwin song from, I think, 1926. Mm-hmm. And to me, there are many different ways to interpret those songs. I mean, some people do a really up-tempo version, but I do it very slowly, much like the way that Judy Garland recorded it. But it's just so sexy to me, that song. So that's the way that I sort of paint it in whatever colors you know. You buy sexy. That's kind of the way I think about it.
Well, you did a whole CD of Irving Berlin, and you have certain artists that you seem to pull from with frequency. Who are the artists that really speak to you, and are there particular ones right now that you're have piqued your interest besides Berlin?
Well, in terms of singers, like, I always loved Jo Stafford. To me, she had such a tone that was so rich, but a really sort of stately but luscious style at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So she, I find her really interesting and extremely pleasurable to listen to. There's Jo Stafford, Helen Morgan I got into a lot because of all of her work with big bands. I don't know. I love Fred Astaire always because he's like the cleanest of singers, you know, of all.
Yeah.
Stylistically. Like, and if you want to know what a song is supposed to sound like from the written page, like, just listen to it, to Fred Astaire recording.
Wow.
He's good history.
So are there composers and lyricists that really speak to you right now in your life?
Sure. Yeah. I always loved Jerome Kern's music.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A lot. It's so beautiful. Lawrence Hart's lyrics are, of course, gorgeous. I think He Was Too Good to Me Now, which is one of Hart's most beautiful lyrics, I think.
Yeah.
And I sing a song by Joan Baez now, and I'm really getting into her songwriting.
Well, it's interesting. When you mentioned her, I thought, well, I wonder if she's pulling from some of these artists that one would never think to sing it in the style and maybe with the instruments in which you have, and then you just to really put your mod spin on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it would be, I mean, who knows? I mean, you know, you definitely hear artists of an entirely different genre taking a song, from a different, I mean, you know, I've heard everything from like, what, didn't Dolly Parton do the Crash Test Dummies?
Yeah.
But she did it bluegrass
really?
Style. And,
absolutely.
You know, people can take songs from entirely different genres and illuminate it in a whole new way. If it's a, you know, and even I'm thinking of country people for some reason, but Johnny Cash did the, wasn't it Nine Inch Nails?
Yep.
Or so I'm just wondering if you might start pulling from some of that, those Deadhead and kind of hippie roots.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's part of the gift of a song. You know, once it's written, it's there forever. And there's opportunity for it to have a life way beyond its conception, you know.
Yeah.
It can live through the most memorable recordings, but then it's there to play with, you know. And I think as long as respect is given to the original skeletal structure of the song, there are so many different ways to make a song meaningful.
Well, obviously you're making music meaningful to people because you're having, I was saying to you right before we started the interview, but that I had the pleasure of actually seeing you sing at Feinstein's in the Regency back in 2001 when you opened for Michael. And I know that you've worked a lot with Andrea Markovici and you've just had so many wonderful opportunities, and there's so much buzz about you in New York City. And it seems like that's really... that it's just your career is really soaring right now. Your newest CD is a Maud Maggart Live, and I guess one of the things I want to know is, isn't cabaret truly about that live setting and singing with people, you know, like Andrea or like Michael Feinstein, or just playing with these musicians live? I would think this genre of all is so influenced by the audience and the environment.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I can't think of an art form that's more intimate between the performer and the audience. I mean, they're literally like right in front of you. There's no fourth wall. It is. It's really the most intimate, and I like it that way. It makes it different every night. And it is kind of fun to think about cabaret on CD because the whole purpose of it is to be right there in the experience. I mean, the point is to go into a cabaret, a little room with no windows usually, and really get lost in another world that you can feel you take part of. I mean, you literally change the chemistry of the show by sitting in your seat and being there. So that's part of why it's special. So I tried to I don't know. I tried to put it on the CD, and you'll hear me talking on it. And
yeah, it's nice.
Stories.
Yeah, it's really great. See, I love that.
Yeah, I was going to say that's one of the charms of cabaret is that that's that storytelling that you get into. So you are a talker between songs, and you do.
I'm a talker.
So you've put this show together, Good Girl, Bad Girl, and that is the show that you are bringing that has been such a hit in New York and that is coming to Steppenwolf as a part of the Traffic series. And for people who don't know, the Traffic series at Steppenwolf really this year, I think, has really hit the ultimate example of what it should be. In the past, it's been kind of a sporadic series of performance artists, musicians, storyteller type of singers. And what they have done right now is they're having a 3-week festival, and we're going to be interviewing and have interviewed some of the people who are going to be appearing in the styles of music and just what is coming to the city of Chicago almost every night for 3 weeks is fantastic. But you've been running at the Algonquin. Talk to us about how you put Good Girl, Bad Girl together and, you know, are you the good girl and the bad girl, or tell us a little bit about the show?
That question is the answer. I started thinking about the fact that a lot of the songs that I'm drawn to fall into the category of the character is either a good girl or a bad girl.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought, man, it's not only the songs that I'm drawn to, it's almost like every song from the American Popular Songbook. And what I mean is it's either from the point of view of someone who is innocent or who's completely devoted to whomever they may be in love with, or it's from the point of view of somebody who's a little more curious, or either is experienced already and is not ashamed of it, or someone who wants to be more experienced. So that to me was interesting, and then I started thinking about, well, what songs kind of fall in the middle, because there's no such thing as a good girl and there's no such thing as a completely bad girl.
Yeah.
Where to be human is to lie somewhere in the middle. So I basically leave it up to the audience to listen to the songs in a new way, and even if they have an impression of a song like, oh, that's a naughty little song, like really listen to it and then see what you think.
Well, now, I haven't seen the show, but I did a little reading about you today, about this show in particular, and it talks a little bit about the Little Red Riding Hood kind of metaphor. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think that Little Red Riding Hood is a good metaphor for the question. Was she, I mean, obviously, you know, that all these fairy tale girls are just, it's rife with metaphor. I mean, she's a young, innocent girl going to see her grandmother bringing her, you know, goodies in a basket. What could be more innocent? But she goes by herself. She's wearing a red cape, you know, in nature, very attractive to other things.
Right.
And, you know, then she gets devoured by this wolf. So what happens? Does she lose her innocence once she's devoured, even though it's not of her own volition, you know, or was it, you know? I know that it's a question that most people are asking themselves as we speak. So.
Right.
No, I know. It's like only I think about these silly things. But, you know, it's not only Little Red Riding Hood. It's characters like Snow White, you know, virginal, whose other name, I think, was Rose Red.
Right.
You know, there's Sleeping Beauty, who could only accept a kiss if she was unconscious. You know?
Right.
So it's a funny way that, you know, we learn about these fairy tale women, and it seeps into you know, your collective unconscious and seeps into the way popular songs were written. You know, roles were sort of carved out for women.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So yeah, Little Red Riding Hood, I do two songs in the show that talk about Little Red Riding Hood, and the first one is kind of a song that was banned in the 1930s from the radio, and then the second one is a Stephen Sondheim song from Into the Woods, which is a more, you know, conscious take on what the story really meant.
Right. Oh, well, it's so exciting. This is your Chicago debut, and are you familiar much with the Chicago music scene? I mean, it's a very indie scene here, and yet we have the big cabaret convention every year ourselves. I think Andrea has been here many, many, many times. Mm-hmm. You know, are you excited about kind of becoming now a part of this music experience here in Chicago?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if you're alive, you know that Chicago has this tremendously rich musical history. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really excited to to come there.
And is Steppenwolf daunting to you? Because it's a big. It's, it I mean, it's I know you've sung. I know you sang at Carnegie, right, with Michael? Is that correct?
Yes.
So you've sung in some big venues, but you know, it's a bigger. It's not a. It has no windows. I'll tell you that. But it's
good.
I mean, it feels like an intimate space, but it's a big space. Does that, you know, is there something different that you'll be thinking about, and who will you be bringing to play with you?
I'll be bringing my pianist, and I have someone who plays the cello and guitar. So it'll be piano, cello, and guitar.
Well, it's going to be a thrilling night.
I am. I'm very excited.
We're very, very excited.
And it's a perfect night. It's on a Thursday night, so that's the perfect night to go out and enjoy something. And then keep on going out.
Exactly. And Maude has a website, of course, because she's a savvy girl, like most of us now.
She's
have to have your own website. MaudeMaggart.com. That's MaudeMaggart.com. And she's going to be playing at Steppenwolf one night only, Thursday, March 8th at 7:30. If you want tickets, you can go to steppenwolf.org. Or call them at 312-335-1650. And I'm just curious about one other thing, and I think it's because I've actually interviewed Rufus Wainwright a couple of times, and you know, he has really started doing this thing where he comes from this musical family as well, and I feel like you all are kind of the same age and also have this kind of throwback quality to your voice, both of you. And I'm wondering, you know, is there interest in you kind of pulling in, you know, family members and trying to do something together? Would you and your sister ever do anything together or do something with one of your parents?
Yeah,
talk about that. Yeah. Is that something on the horizon?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's on the horizon. I mean, we are kind of just throwing around ideas right now. And cause we grew up loving to sing together.
Yeah.
Make music. So, yeah, that's something that we definitely think about.
Well, if you're throwing around.
But nothing definite.
If you're throwing around ideas and singing in a room, record it now.
That's right.
Record it now.
I agree with you.
Exactly.
Just record it.
I agree. Very smart words.
Lay it down. Yes. Well, we hope that you'll come. And are you going to be here long enough to enjoy any of the city?
I hope so.
Good.
Oh, excellent. You got to get to the Green Mill if you can, just for a moment.
Yeah, you need to go to the Green Mill Club. That is where you need to go.
That's where.
Oh, all right.
You know, the Billies and the Franks, and they all did their little thing.
And
there
Patricia Barber's
there.
Patricia,
I mean, everybody.
Once a week. And yeah.
My beautiful. Sunday night, Kimberly, she's there.
Yeah.
Kimberly Gordon.
Beautiful club. And we hope everybody else will head out to see Maude at Steppenwolf. One night only, Thursday, March 8th at 7:30. For tickets, go to steppenwolf.org or give their box office a call, and we'll have all the information on our site. So, Maude, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. Thanks, Peter.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
I'd forget to smile, then I met you. Now that my
the best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show and Limelight.